Wow. I did not know there was that many fake wigs in Cincinnati. Nor that Crossroads was that white. I didn't realize, and I'm not talking about skin hue, but I'm talking about lack of ability to meld rhythm and movement. It's really, really crazy. Man, it's been great this whole journey. I know for me, this journey has had a number of different meanings. We're talking in the strong journey. Today we cap it off, although the final capstone is going to happen next week. But in the midst of talking about strength, I've came to face-to-face with my own personal frailty. A few weeks ago, I decided to go under the knife and have vocal cord surgery. They took a cyst off of my vocal cords, and so it kind of put me on the sideline for a bit. I'm still on the sideline in many ways. I had to go a whole week without saying a single word. The next week, I could have 10 minutes out of an hour. Right now, I'm on 20 minutes an hour. And by the way, the surgery went great, and I'm recovering really, really well. I can't talk loud for 35 minutes yet, but I can do this right now. So it's awesome to be here with you today, and it's been fun just seeing, experiencing this strong challenge on numerous levels, sitting under the teaching. And how about last week with Kathy? How great was that? Man, phenomenal, phenomenal, phenomenal. One of the things that she led really well into was the Thanksgiving food drive, and boy, we have a great start. In the midst of a very, very difficult economy, Crossroads, again, you all are showing your generosity. We compared our numbers of boxes taken last week, which is the first weekend the boxes were available, versus boxes available the first weekend a year ago. So first week to first week over a year time, we're up so far 50%. 50%. That is phenomenal. Way to go. Awesome. We're still not there. Chuck's going to talk about in a moment. It's not about starting strong, starting with good intentions. It's about finishing strong. We need to finish strong, not just in the strong challenge or in the strength of our long-term life, but even in the midst of the Thanksgiving food drive. So we still need a lot more boxes picked up. They're available outside. Make sure you pick them up, and maybe you want to do 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Who knows how many you want to do? Maybe you're in a difficult spot, and you want to partner up with other people to kind of go in on a box, but we need to continue to get the boxes today. They're available out there, and then next week, we need to finish them. We need to bring them back. Doesn't matter how many boxes are taken. We need to fill them and bring them back. If you don't bring them back and you committed to one, you are a bad person, and people will be hungry on Thanksgiving, and kids will cry, and it will all be your fault. That's pastoral guilt right there. And very, you know, pastoral guilt sometimes just works really well, and I normally don't use it, but it just felt fun to say that anyway. So let's make sure that we finish strong next week, and a little word of the wise, there will be liquid love everywhere. It's going to be amazing on our campuses and in Mason and in Oakley, but here in Oakley, you're going to have to show up. If you're going to come to this service especially, show up a half hour early to be able to drop your stuff off and be in lines, and actually, it'll be a great half hour. You'll enjoy every moment of it. Another thing that I want to draw your attention to is every year, Crossroads at this time of year is similar to many other nonprofit organizations where we have to finish strong financially at the end of the year. And this year especially, we are more aggressive in spending more money than we ever have. In a time when most people are financially getting more conservative, Crossroads is getting more liberal. And I don't mean politically, I just mean generosity. We are funneling money outside of ourselves, building things that are going to bless people like never before. And we need to finish strong this year. And so I know a lot of us, we give regularly, we've made game change commitments, we've gone above and beyond. And as to borrow a metaphor from the Game Change campaign, we're joyfully bleeding. We are joyfully bleeding, and the idea of doing something different above and beyond in the year end is really not relevant to you at all, because you're going above and beyond regularly, and you're feeling it, and I think for a lot of us, God is saying, hey, well done, well done. Others of us, I just want to kind of bring it above the radar screen, as Kathy mentioned last week. People who are important to us over the holidays sometimes get something that is above and beyond to be a blessing to them. And if Crossroads, if God has used Crossroads to build into you, or you see how God is using Crossroads to bless the region and the world, I would just encourage you to be mindful of that over the next 2 months. Normally this time of the year, we talk about the logistics of giving, because our final few weeks of the year, we don't take up an offering. We have awaited shows, we bring friends in, and we never have this weird bag thing pass by, which is financial suicide, but we say, no, we're not about money, we're about our friends and about honoring God, so we don't pass a bag, which is the primary way that we kind of do giving around here. But it's important right now to also say not just the logistics of how you might give, but just to be aware of this. It's weird, actually. You know, a bag. Where else are we anywhere in society where a bag comes by and we put money in? That is weird. Really, only churches have this old holdover tradition that's really actually not all that effective. Actually, 35% of all of Crossroads giving comes electronically. I know for my family, if we are ever going to do something that's important to us, it happens electronically. Our mortgage, important to us, electronically. Our utilities, important to us, electronically. Insurance, all that stuff. And if you want to consider that, and it's easier for you, you can go to crossroads.net/year-end-giving and make a simplified thing. And I just ask you to consider that and pray about that over the next 2 months. Well, today, we're going to be talking about somebody who's inspired me in his generosity because he's poured into my life in an amazing way. He is finishing strong. His name is Gil Hopkins. He's the star athlete we are going to, some of you know him, he's a star athlete we're going to highlight today as we finish strong in the Strong Challenge. When Libby and I first moved from Pittsburgh to Cincinnati to help start Crossroads in November of 1995, I asked some friends back in Pittsburgh, do you know anybody in Cincinnati who I might get together with and try to pull them into the core group to make this thing happen? And a friend of mine said, you ought to get together with Gil Hopkins. I said, okay. So I had his number. I called him up. And we met at Indigo Cafe in Hyde Park Square. And I sat with Gil. At that point, he was about 113 at that point in his life. He was amazingly old. And I cast the vision for him of what we were trying to do as a church. We were trying to reach our friends who had given up on church but hadn't necessarily given up on God. We never started Crossroads to be approved by for people who like church. We never started Crossroads so the people who like going to church would like Crossroads. We started Crossroads because our friends, we burned for them. We wanted to see them connect with God in a way that they were not able to in other venues. And so as I was laying this vision down for Gil, I talked about how this had happened for me. How at the age of 15, 16, there was a guy by the name of Denny Patton who built into me and communicated to me the difference between the Christian religion and relationship with Christ. Those are two categorically different things. I want to say this again. There's a fundamental difference between the Christian religion and relationship with Christ. You can have one and not have the other. And that was very apparent to me when Denny built into me and I made a decision to say to Jesus, Jesus, I want to receive you into my life. I ask forgiveness for the sin that I've had in my life. Would you fill me with your spirit? It was a moment that cemented me in relationship with God and changed the trajectory of my entire life. And as I was telling Gil this, Gil looked at me and said, yeah, Denny Patton, I know him. I actually led him to Christ when he was in high school. And I learned that here in Cincinnati, my spiritual grandfather lived. And he's built into me and has had a profound impact on me for over 15 years. I spend as much time with him as I possibly can. On Thursday afternoons, which are sort of my Friday afternoons, because I take Friday off, as often as possible, we gather in my office. We have a beer or two at the end of the week, and we talk about the things that have been happening in our life, and we laugh, and it's a great time. As he has gotten older, he's gotten shorter and shorter. His spine is compressed. He's about a foot and a half tall at this point. He's gotten kind of shorter and shorter, but he's gotten actually stronger and stronger. His emotional life, his intellectual life, he is a powerful entity, and we're going to take a look at him and why we're thankful for how he is finishing strong and blessing us as a community. And while we do that, we're going to do the old fuddy-duddy basket thing is going to come by. If you want to do that, awesome. If not, no worries. Let it pass you by, and let's check out Gil.
Well, my early remembrances were living with my father until I was in the finished the second grade, and I made a choice of who to live with. So I went with my mother and grew up in Florida. I spent some time involved in Sunday schools at different times, and it seemed like God seemed important to me at times, but nobody ever really got through to me about it. went in the service when I was 16 years old. Told my mother, unless she signed the papers and said I was 17, I was going to quit school and be a bum anyway. So she signed the papers, and I went in the service at 16. When I got out of the service, the first job I really got was went on the police department in Miami, Florida. And from there on, it was one thing after another. So, but nothing to do with God. Faith really didn't have anything to do until 14 years into our marriage. The church was our social center. There was a young couples group at the church that we were a part of, and it was mainly a pretty good drinking society. It was kind of interesting. While we were at the church and active, I taught fifth grade Sunday school. And it's interesting, when we joined Covenant Country Club, they asked me if I was a Christian. And when I wanted to teach Sunday school at the church, they didn't ask me if I was a Christian. I was not a Christian at that point, but I enjoyed being with the kids, and so sometimes very hungover, I was there on Sunday morning teaching Sunday school to the fifth graders. College Hill got a new pastor. They were going to have a preaching mission, and it was starting on a Sunday morning, and Joanne wanted me to go, and I had a golf game, and I came home from the golf game usually after spending 2 or 3 hours in the bar after the game. And usually that meant we were going to have a little fight. She came to meet me at the door and said, "Oh, I wish you could have heard this guy." And I surprised myself by saying, "Well, he's going to be there tonight, isn't he?" And the fellow was had been an All-American, a consensus All-American linebacker at UCLA, Don Muma. First time I've ever heard anybody laying out Christ in a way that I thought got my attention. The big message I heard was that God could forgive you for your sins. I wasn't proud about a lot of the stuff I did as a policeman. I wasn't proud about a lot of the stuff I did personally. I didn't see myself as being that worthwhile, and I left it go. 2 days later, I ended up flying to California to get this nonsense out of my head. It's where Muma was from, and the only way I can get it out of my mind is to deal with the guy that planted it there, so that's why I chased Muma down. When I got to California, he wasn't there yet. He hadn't gotten back. So I took 3 days to drink and think about it. And then one night, I ended up walking out into the ocean. I tried to drown myself. Washed up on the beach and hauled to the hospital. And here I am. When Muma had talked to me on the phone and he asked me if drinking was a problem when I was yet in the hospital, and I gave him the rationalization that drinking wasn't a problem. When he took me to the hospital, he asked me the question, is drinking a problem? And I gave him the rationalization that drinking wasn't a problem. When he's taking me to the airport, he asked me the question, Gil, is drinking a problem? And I thought this guy was smart, but he is a dumbbell. I've told him twice. And I started the rationalization again. I got about halfway through it and realized it was on tape. I mean, it was word for word what I was saying. And I stopped in the middle of it and said, oh, hell yes, Don, drinking is a problem. And we got to the airport and pulled up and we prayed, and that's when I received Christ. At College Hill, we had a preaching mission a year after I became a Christian that 30 high school kids responded to and came to the Lord. And we started meeting with those 30 kids on Sunday afternoons and telling them to bring a bag lunch. So we turned 30 into 7 in about 6 weeks. And the 7 that we had went to Pittsburgh with us to a PUBC meeting where we heard about Chuck Miller, who was at the big Presbyterian church in D.C., who had a teen breakfast club going that met at 6:30 in the morning on a school day. And Jerry and I and the kids got together and talked about that night, and the kids thought, well, it might be worth a try. And we got back, and Jerry announced, well, I'm not a morning person, so this is yours, Gil. And I'd never done anything like it. As a matter of fact, it scared me to death. But we started it up. I had no idea what I was doing, but the first summer after we started, we had a couple of college kids involved from Pittsburgh that were involved in Young Life there. And they got me introduced to Young Life, and Young Life was having a leadership training camp out in Colorado. And I got booked for that. So I got a total of 1 week's training in Christian youth work. And that's some and substance of my formal education. But at the time, Teen Breakfast Club had grown, oh, I don't know, might have gotten to 100 kids, but from 6 or 7 different high schools. Kids just kept bringing kids, And it just, over the years, it got to the place that we were having 700 kids on a weekend, on a Thursday morning at 6:30 in the morning. That's when I decided, well, we need to make this Young Life and go into the different high schools. So that's when we made the joined up with Young Life, and I ended up on their staff.
Meeting with Gil was my first honest attempt at pursuing a relationship with God. And so really, Gil, though there have been other people in my life, Gil was the first person who I actually sat down with and said, okay, I don't know how to do this. You got to help me do this. And I don't think that at the time I thought Gil had it all together. Like there wasn't, I didn't see him and I go, well, this guy's got it all figured out, because he would tell me stories of his life. And I just thought, well, man, at one point in this life, this guy was a jerk. And I really connected with that, because at the time I was a jerk. I feel like we really got along well because we sort of shared that. But he had walked from this life of being essentially consumed by alcohol and being selfish and mean to this guy that I'm now sitting down with having breakfast. And so I think more than I saw God in him, I saw myself in him. And so it gave me hope, because I think I believed at the time that I was beyond what I now call redemption. So it was, you know, a couple years of this, of us sort of sitting down, and I had never loved my wife before this. I was married, and I didn't show my wife love. I was a father, and I didn't love my children. So these seemingly, you know, innocuous encounters with Gil on Monday mornings every week became the foundation of my faith. And it's what made me love my wife. It's what made me want to be a father. And again, we weren't doing anything. I don't know, we were just reading a book together. But I think it was the way I saw this man who had lived his entire life, who, when I saw in his stories, a man who also thought he was beyond redemption. So I saw myself in him, and it encouraged me. And because of that, I pursued God.
That's strong. tell you, Gil Hopkins inspires me, and he should inspire all of us, because if you've been impacted in any way by anything around the Strong Challenge, anything at Crossroads, then you're a part, a direct part of Gil Hopkins' legacy, because that's a man who chose to finish strong. And I'm telling you, the thing that I am most inspired by with him is he was a very unlikely starter. He was a very unlikely starter. Can you imagine him hungover teaching kids in Sunday school? I mean, like, just that image alone. And what that tells me, what Gil's story is all about, is it doesn't matter how you start. What matters is how you finish. And that's what we're going to talk about today. Because for the last 6 weeks, you have started something that can continue. You've started something that I think is ultimately the best way to live our lives. And that is, you've started to engage in fresh ways, in new ways, maybe for the first time, maybe just building on a foundation that was already there, of engaging and encountering this God, this Jesus, who actually wants to make you strong. And today, at the end of this challenge, at the end of this weekend, I want you to know, you've got a choice to make. And the choice is very simple. Will you be a starter or will you be a finisher? Will you be a starter or will you be a finisher? See, a lot of people start things. I've started a lot of things in my life. I have started a lot of exercise routines in my life. And if you look in my basement, you will see the evidence that I was a starter. The question is, will you be a finisher? See, the opportunity we have today is to choose to be a finisher. And you've got all the tools you need. Over the last 6 weeks, we've engaged in ways with God, and you've gotten tools. You've been in community. And it is a basic set of tools that you need to finish strong. The question is, though, do you have the motivation to finish strong? And I want to tell you, the motivation comes from an unlikely place. It comes from an unlikely source. And yet, it is exactly the motivation that allows us to finish strong. Blaise Pascal, the philosopher, talked about it this way. He said, all men seek happiness. This is without exception. Whatever different means they employ, they all tend to this end. So no matter what it is we're doing, no matter what it is that we're trying to live our life by, whatever the foundation is we're building our life on, ultimately we think that's going to bring us happiness. That's why we do it. That's why we do it. And it may sound very selfish. It may sound like self-help psychobabble to say that what we've done over the last 6 weeks was really all about joy, was really all about happiness, because I believe the only lasting source of happiness, the only fuel for the strong life, is the joy that is found in a vibrant, life-giving relationship with Jesus. And that's what we've been after for the last 6 weeks. And I want to encourage you today to finish that way, to finish strong, because this is about joy. This is about joy. This is what Jesus said in John 15:11. He said, I have told you these things so that you will be filled with my joy. Yes, your joy will overflow. Jesus, in this passage, was describing the strong life. He talks about abiding or remaining with him. And he says, and I've told you this, not just so you can have power, not just so you can have intellectual prowess, not just so you can check a religious box, but I've told you this because this is the path to joy. This is the path to joy. I love how Nehemiah 8 puts it. It simply says, the joy of the Lord is your strength. The strength, the fuel, the fire for the life of finishing strong is actually joy. And we can find joy when we choose to be a finisher and not just let this be a six-week experience that happens sometime in a fall at one point in your life, but when we choose to build on this foundation and continue to run this race, we can finish strong. And so I just want to encourage you guys today, from one runner to another, to finish strong. And one of the ways we do that is we run hard after joy. Run hard after joy. After this 6 weeks is over, I want you to know this is about running after joy. This is about running hard after joy. It's about running hard after a joy that overflows. There's a passage in the New Testament, and for me, it's probably the best I could give you as a roadmap for the life of finishing strong. It's Colossians 2:6-7, and it says, so then, just as you received Christ Jesus as Lord, continue to live in him, rooted and built up in him, strengthened in the faith as you were taught, and overflowing with thankfulness. I love this passage. I love how it ends. You know, if you follow this path, it's talking about the fact that what you've begun was a choice to receive. It started with receiving. And the same way that you receive in Jesus is the same way you continue in him, just putting yourself in a position to be strengthened. See, that's our role, but what is his role? His role is to root us. His role is to build us up. His role is to strengthen us in the faith. And the result is not intellectual prowess. The result is not just being a disciplined person. The result is that there is an overflow of joy that impacts our life, an overflow of joy that is the source and the base of strength that can actually be a blessing and an impact to other people. And that's what it means to run hard after joy. And I'm encouraging you to do that. I'm encouraging you to not stop here, but to run hard after joy. I love that imagery of being built up, being strong. And every time in the Bible, this idea of maturity, this idea of strength is described, those are the kinds of words you see: complete, built up, mature, strong. These are the kind of words that describe this life that we're called to live, this race we're called to run is about that. And those words were used in that time in the first century. They were used to describe specific people. They were used to describe rabbis or teachers, because these are people who walked with God. These are people like Gil, who you could look at and you could say there is a gravity, there is a weight to their life, and that person, that man, that woman is a complete person. They're a mature person. They're a strong person. Doesn't mean they're perfect, but there is a level of completeness in their life that I can aspire to, because there's power flowing out of them. You know, it was also used to describe parents in relation to children. Because the picture was, when you're an adult, when you're a parent, there's a level of completion, there's a level of maturity, a level of strength that you bring to this world that is not true for children. Children are in the process of growing up, which actually reminds me of an experience in my life. You know, there's a whole group of people in the world who actually think they're complete, mature, and strong when they're not. We actually have a name for them. We call them teenagers. What we call them, right? And we've been them. We've been them. See, when I was a teenager, you couldn't tell me I wasn't complete. You couldn't tell me I wasn't mature. You couldn't tell me I wasn't strong. Actually, I should say, you couldn't tell me that unless you were my mother. My mother was really good at telling me that. Really put me in my place. You know, my mom, you know, I would blow curfew. I would do things that I knew were against the rules. And I just felt like, Mom, you know what? I got a part-time job. I'm doing good in school. And I got a hoopty outside. You can't talk to me about, you know, I'm doing pretty good. I think I got this life thing figured out. And my problem was, I didn't just think that, but every now and then I actually would tell my mom that. That's where I got into trouble. Because my mom was really good with words. And she would quickly help me understand the difference between being complete and mature and where I was, you know, because my mom would say things like, well, honey, here's what you need to understand, baby. When she used those affectionate words, that meant I was in trouble. Baby, what you need to understand is this. You don't make enough money to pay the bills in this house. Somebody's heard that, right? You don't make enough money to pay the bills in this house, so it doesn't matter what time you think you need to be in this house. Until you pay the bills in this house, I'm telling you need to be in this house by 11 o'clock. That's how it goes. That's how it works. Baby, sweetheart, I understand that car, that hoopty you have outside, but here's the thing. You didn't pay the note on that hoopty that you have outside. And so until you do that, you need to get that hoopty parked in front of my house when I tell you to. That's the way this works in our house. You know, and my mom made a line famous far before Bill Cosby did. My mom would tell me this. She'd say, I brought you in this world. And you guys understand how that one ends, right? And I'll take you out of this world. I'll take you out of this world. My mom used to say, I wish you would call 241 kids, because when they came in the house, I'd be beating you and I'd beat them out of my house, because that's the way it works in this house. Because she was complete, she was mature, and it was clear at the point that I was not. And so this picture we get of maturity is that there are people who have achieved the level of completion, not because of anything they've done, but simply because they've continued to receive. They've continued to be strengthened, rooted, and built up in this relationship. And the evidence is not their intellectual prowess. The evidence is not their discipline. The evidence is their joy. Did you see what was on the back of Gil's scooter? Did you see that word? Joy. Joy is the only lasting motivation for finishing strong. And so I'm encouraging you guys, as you continue through this week, as you continue through your life, to build on the foundation we've established. Run hard after joy. That's the vision. That's the picture that God has for us. It's a picture of joy, so our joy will overflow. So run hard after joy. But not only that, the other thing that I know, and I see this in the life of Gil, I see this in the life of people who finish strong, they have learned to embrace the hurdles. See, let me fill you in a little secret if you didn't know this or not. Finishing strong doesn't come without its obstacles. Finishing strong doesn't come without its hurdles. Challenges are coming. Difficulties are coming. You will hit the wall. One of the most freeing things for me was when someone took the time to explain that part of the spiritual growth process, part of the process of growing in relationship with Jesus, is hitting the wall, is getting stuck, is getting to a dry place, is getting to a place where it's just not working, is dealing with difficulty, dealing with suffering, dealing with doubts, that is not separate from this process, that is a part of this process, and yet there is something that can be built in you and established in you when you go through difficulty unlike any other time in your life. And I think that's why James, many of us did the challenge of reading James, read a whole book, and he talks about this when he says simply, consider it pure joy. There's that word again. My brothers, whenever you face trials of many kinds, because you know that the testing of your faith develops perseverance, and perseverance must finish its work so that you may be, and there's these words again, mature and complete, not lacking in anything. See, one of the things that I have to realize is I will hit the wall. Actually, I hit the wall in the midst of the strong challenge. I don't know if I'm the only person, but I hit a wall 2 weeks ago. Actually, it was right after I stood up here for the weekend and encouraged us all to train hard so we can finish hard. And Monday, I hit the wall. My wife got sick. She got bronchitis. She was just out of commission. And I took off, and I'm home, and I'm with a three-year-old and a four-month-old, and I'm trying to care for my wife. And can I just tell you, I would love to tell you that at that point, I was considering it all joy, but I wasn't. There was grumbling, there was complaining, there was frustration, there was questioning. And I realized that this is the natural process whenever I hit the wall. And that was a small wall. That wasn't a big one. I've experienced bigger ones. But the natural process is the first thing I do is I say, come on, God. God, I'm doing this strong challenge for you. You should be impressed with me right now. You should be helping me out right now. I think it's easy for our minds to go there. You know, and then you start to wonder, was God really interested? When you go through difficult times, does he really care? Is he really there? Is this just all psychological stuff in my head? And it's easy for us to go there. I think the other place we can go, and I went here too, is I'm just such a loser. Man, I just don't have what it takes. I'm trying to tell people to finish strong, and here I am. I hit a wall, and I didn't do the prayer experience. I didn't do the challenges that week that I wanted to do, and I hit the wall. And I had to realize, you know what? It doesn't have to be either of those things. There's going to be difficulty. I'm going to hit hurdles. And when I do, the opportunity is there for God to build something in me that doesn't exist any other way. And I got a glimpse of what that was the next week when I came, and Kathy, who knocked it out of the park because she was talking about serving, she talked about the difference between being a servant and serving. And being a servant is adopting this mindset all the time that is my position, and I'm called to be in that position, not just to serve when it's convenient for me. And I realized that week as I was grumbling and complaining, God was building a capacity in me to recognize that's your role to your family. Your role is to be a servant. And you know what? That was a difficult hurdle. But as I embraced that hurdle, I was strengthened by it. And the other thing that inspired me was I got to see other people around me and how they were embracing hurdles in their life. Good friend of mine on staff, and he's a guy who, young family, just a really cool guy. And he got a diagnosis this past week that he shared, and it's a diagnosis that no one wants to get. He got diagnosed with testicular cancer. And, you know, just hear that, the C word, that thing has a life of its own. And it challenges even the most trusting among us in God. It challenges even the most faithful among us. And I got to watch, and this is just the beginning, but I got to watch this guy walk through this hurdle with incredible strength. Because here's what he did. His first response was to go to community, to go to the staff and say, hey, this is where I'm at. This is the diagnosis I've received, and I want you guys to pray with me, and I'm excited and interested in healing, and you can pray for that. I also feel like there are things that God's been putting in place in my life that have prepared me to walk through this, and I want to walk through it well. And man, I was just like, that's what it takes. That's the inspiration it takes. He's embracing a hurdle, not a hurdle he asked for, not a hurdle he wants. Cool update on that story is the next day he got a great prognosis. You know, it's weird to say this, but we're celebrating the fact that the cancer is there, but it's isolated. And so the prognosis in the future for him is good. But what I loved was before he knew that, this is a guy who said, I'm going to embrace this hurdle. I'm going to embrace this hurdle. I'm going to allow it to make me strong. And that is what it takes. I need to see other people around me embracing hurdles, enduring hardship, to be encouraged to finish strong. Because people who finish strong recognize challenges coming, but they embrace it. And they use it as an opportunity to allow God to strengthen them in unique ways. You know, and I love how James talks about there are many kinds of trials, right? Many kinds of trials. Some of us, it's financial. Financial trials. In fact, this time last year, many of us made a bold decision to give above and beyond what we were regularly giving for 3 years for the Game Change campaign. And I know, because I interact with folks, I know that some people are wrestling through that right now. I know that it hasn't been an easy road for many people who made perhaps the biggest financial commitment they had ever made in their life to that point. And I want to encourage you to embrace this time. To embrace this time, to not let this be a time where you fall off or slack off, but recognize there is something God is producing in you, even as you walk through the difficult process of fulfilling that commitment. There's a story that has encouraged many of us, and I wanted to share it with you guys again, because it just talks about how what happens, it talks about what happens when you embrace this hurdle. And this is a couple who made a commitment for Game Change, and they're just talking about how embracing this hurdle has really impacted their life. I want to read this to you. The wife says, "Our marriage was founded on strict financial stewardship. You paid everything down as soon as possible and saved as much as you could because there would never be enough. My husband had anxiety over expenditures and even utility bills at season changes. We never made any financial decision without him running all the possibilities through a spreadsheet. He needed to feel in control and be aware of all the possible outcomes. Money was not our friend." People can relate to that. Money was not our friend. It was a necessary evil, a beloved enemy. When it was time for my husband and I to discuss how much we were going to commit, he said, "I'm thinking about a lot of money." He must have been waiting for me to freak out. I never have to freak out about finances because I can always count on him to be worried about everything already. Although my initial reaction was that his number was more than he made last year. He went on to tell me that he hadn't analyzed any numbers or used any of his precious spreadsheets to come up with that amount. It's just what he thought God might want. I knew then this was God-inspired. No spreadsheets. This is definitely not of my husband. And listen to what she says the result of embracing that hurdle for them has been. She says, "Game Change was a moment in time when I realized all the work that had gone on years before. The boy I married is not the man I am partnered with today. He's so much more free than the kid I first met. He lives a fuller life of faith and isn't controlled by fear. He's stronger. He is more firmly rooted in the Lord and a better leader as a husband, father, and visionary for our family. He has relationships that go far deeper with his friends than we would have ever thought possible. He is a new creation, and I wouldn't have seen that if this opportunity hadn't been presented." I want to call out people in here who hit a wall. Maybe you hit a wall in the 6 weeks of the Strong Challenge. Maybe it was something to do with the challenge. Maybe it was something unexpected. Maybe there was a job wall you hit. Maybe there was a relational wall you hit. Maybe there was a spiritual wall you hit. And I just want to encourage you that there is an opportunity right now in your life, for you to embrace that and be strengthened by it. You know, a good friend of mine told me this in marriage, and I think it's true as it relates to hitting the wall too. Never waste a good fight. Never waste a good fight. Because there's something that can be produced in your life in the midst of difficulty that doesn't come any other way, and you need it. You need it in order to finish strong. I'm not asking you to go and look for ways to be in trouble. I'm not asking you to look for ways to find suffering. It'll find you. Don't worry about it. It'll find you. It'll find you. But when it finds you, the choice you have is, will you be a starter or will you be a finisher? If you want to finish strong, you can embrace that. And what that looks like is going right back to what Colossians said, leaning in to the Jesus who wants to root you. Leaning in to the Jesus who wants to build you up. Leaning in to the Jesus who wants to strengthen you in the faith as you were taught. And that can happen in unique ways in the midst of suffering. So run hard after joy and embrace the hurdles that are going to come along the way. Because that's what it looks like to finish strong. And I want you to do that because the goal for us is simply to finish the race. It's to finish the race. I want to encourage you guys today to finish this race. This 6 weeks is just the beginning. It's just the beginning. There's a race that's far bigger, far greater. There's a race that has far wider implications, and you're in the middle of it right now, and these tools are meant to strengthen you for that race, and I'm encouraging you to finish that race. Paul is a guy who wrote a lot of the New Testament, just a prolific guy in his relationship with God, a lot like Gil. He was an unlikely starter, a guy who was killing followers of Jesus and ultimately wound up growing followers of Jesus. And this is what he says at the end of his life to a dear friend. He says, "I have fought the good fight. I have finished the race. I have kept the faith. Now there is in store for me the crown of righteousness, which the Lord, the righteous judge, will award me on that day. And not only to me, but also to all who have longed for his appearing." I love this. I love this. I want to make this my epitaph, because what Paul understood was this life is not all there is. See, this race that we're running is not only about what happens in this present life. There's a life beyond this life. There's a life yet to come. And Paul had his eyes on the end game of the life that is yet to come. He knew this life was not all there is. And so at the end of his life, he likely wrote these words while he was chained to a Roman soldier. He likely wrote these words, never would experience freedom again as we would define it. And yet at the end of his life, here's a guy who's not bitter. This is a guy who's not doing it out of duty, but there's a joyful expectation that after this life, he's going to see and experience that Jesus, the Jesus that he was praying with, the Jesus that he was playing with, the Jesus that he was studying with, the Jesus that he was training with, the Jesus that he was serving with, and that Jesus was going to look him in the eye and say, Paul, well done. Well done, Paul. There's a race that you ran. You ran for the longest view of your life, and because of that, there is a crown for you. There's a story that inspired me, I heard it this week, of an Ethiopian runner named Abebe Bikila. And he's a man who in 1964, became the first person to win back-to-back the Olympic marathon. But he was a very unlikely starter in this first race. Abebe Bikila didn't make the Ethiopian team outright. He was an alternate. And the only reason he got on the plane a couple days before the Olympic Games in Rome was because of an injury to another player on the team. And so this is a guy who shows up, and he was so late to the party, so late to the game, that even though the Ethiopian team had sponsorship, they had ran out of shoes. And so this guy doesn't have any shoes, and he decided to run that race barefoot. And he won that race. He won that race, running it barefoot. And you know what? The thing that Abebe Bikila understood that we need to understand, I think it's even said that somebody asked him what was the secret, and he said, when I got on that plane, I didn't get on that plane to run a race. I got on that plane to finish a race. And that's the mindset you and I have to have. We didn't start this life to get in a race. We started to finish this race. And I want to encourage us to finish the race. See, don't just start a marriage. I want to encourage you to finish married. I want to tell you, don't just start a business. I want to encourage you to finish by having an impact through that business. Don't just start raising kids. I want you to finish raising them with a picture that there's a race greater than the life they're living right now. Don't just start a commitment. Finish the commitments you make. Don't just start with integrity. Finish with integrity. And don't just start with Jesus, but you can finish with Jesus. Don't just start out with joy when you can finish with joy. This is the opportunity we have. Finish this race. Finish this race before you. The motivation I get from Hebrews 12 just continues to resonate with me for this journey and beyond. Therefore, since we are surrounded by such a great cloud of witnesses, we are surrounded by unlikely starters. We're surrounded by people who showed up at the starting line barefoot. We're surrounded by people who showed up at the starting line without all the resources that we have. We're surrounded by people who showed up at the starting line and they hated God. We're surrounded by people who started up at the finish line all kinds of ways, but they ran a race. Since we are surrounded by such a great cloud of witnesses, let's throw off everything that hinders and the sin that so easily entangles us, and let's run with perseverance the race marked out for us. Let us fix our eyes on Jesus, the author and the perfecter of our faith. I'm challenging you. We all started this journey for a variety of different reasons. Some of us, maybe we started because a friend said, hey, if you do this for 6 weeks, I won't ask you to come to Crossroads for the rest of the year. I don't know. Maybe some of us started this because we were in deep pain and we said, you know what? I need to find something because the life I'm living isn't working. Maybe some of us, we started this race because there was something that happened in our life. We experienced, like Gil, this relationship with Jesus, and we want to grow in that relationship. But it doesn't matter how you started. It doesn't matter why you showed up at the finish line. I want to encourage you to run hard toward the end. Run hard toward being rooted and built up and strengthened in a Jesus who wants to make you strong. I want to encourage you to run hard after joy. Run hard despite the obstacles. Run hard because there's a crown waiting for you. If you're willing to say, I'm not just going to be a starter, but I'm going to choose to be a finisher. Will you choose to be a finisher? Will you choose to be a finisher? Will you choose to be counted among those who finish this race? Well, we can make a declaration right now that, you know what? What we did for these 6 weeks was just laying the foundation, and now we're at the starting line once again. I want to challenge you to sing this song as a declaration. We're going to stand, all of us are going to stand, but I want to challenge you to sing this song only if you're saying, from this point on, I'm choosing to finish. Let's all stand and we're going to sing. And what this song simply says is the only motivation that gets us to the finish line, the only motivation that God is interested in is joy, because the joy of the Lord is our strength. Let's sing this song. To stay strong. We don't want to just get strong, we want to stay strong. And staying strong happens the same way for us as it happened for all of the cloud of witnesses, the same way it happened for Gil, the same way it happens for everyone that finishes strong. You put one foot in front of the other foot, in front of the other foot, in front of the other foot. That's the only way it happens. And I just want to encourage you, this is a week to start building that rhythm into your life, just putting one foot in front of the other foot. Here's what I want to encourage you with. Hey, you got these cards. We got these cards. How many people have enjoyed the cards online or doing them? Whatever it is that worked for you. I want to encourage you this week. The challenge is simply do one more card from each of the 5 weeks. Maybe something you didn't try before. And I just want to encourage you. There's no magic in the cards. But man, if you hit a rut, if you hit a wall, why not take them out? Why not take them out and actually engage with God and allow God to use them to strengthen you in the way that He's used them to strengthen you these last 6 weeks. And if you never touch the cards again, it's not about the cards. But there's a God who can make you strong, and I'm encouraging you to make it a daily rhythm to interact with Him, to know Him, to be strengthened, rooted, and built up in Him. And if journaling is a way that you connect with that, then do that too. Hey, these home teams, it's just true. You train better with a team. It's just true. And just because this week coming up is the last box, the last card week you have, doesn't mean it has to be the last gathering in your group. So I'd encourage you to talk to people about continuing as training partners. You know, maybe it's not the whole group. Maybe there's one person. You just want to go to that one person and say, we connected, and I want to encourage you. I want to invite you into my life that we can train together for this next run. I just want to encourage you to go at that because we need community. That's one of the ways we experience strengthening. It's one of the ways we experience joy, and I'm encouraging you to run after that. We also do something called The Daily. It's an email that you can get every day, 15 minutes of engaging with the Word, 15 minutes of engaging in the Bible, something relevant, something that'll connect with you. If you've already subscribed, it's coming back. You don't have to do anything. But if you haven't subscribed, you can do that. And I just would say, these are just ways, these are just tools. But the ultimate motivation is joy. The reason we do it is joy. So like I said, we have started this race for a variety of reasons. But it's not about how we start. The challenge now is to finish. To finish. And I'm gonna pull something out, and I need to let you know this is just a starter's pistol. Don't freak out. It's a starter's pistol. But I know that when I've run races, there's nothing like that moment when all of the preparation, all of the training is at the starting line. It's all there, and I'm there with a bunch of people who have all committed not to show up to run a race, but to finish a race. And this is that moment for us. This is that moment for us. And so in the spirit of that, I want to say this race has only begun. On your mark, get set. Let's grow strong.